we don't want to do that. So I'm just going to basically introduce the members of the panel. This is session number 271, panel, What Women Know. My name is Doe Daughtry. I'm on the Sunstone Board of Directors. I'm a doctoral candidate in religious studies at Arizona State University, working in religion in America. And this is in no particular order because we're not going to speak in any particular order. I have, maybe raise your hand. Where's Mary Ellen? Oh, there she is. Mary Ellen Robertson. She has a master's degree in women's studies and religion from Claremont Graduate University. She is our new director of outreach and symposia here at Sunstone. Woohoo! Paula Goodfellow, here on the end, is a graduate student in speech and language pathology, a founding mother of the Rocky Mountain Retreat for Mormon Women. Becky Linford has a PhD in history from Georgetown University. Woohoo! And she is currently teaching courses there. Lori Winder, at the very end, has an MA in humanities from BYU. She's a former editor of Mormon Women's Forum Quarterly, and she's a former associate editor and board member of Sunstone. And then Kay Gaisford is from my neighborhood, although a little south in the Phoenix area. She has a master's degree in communications. She's a desktop publisher and a family historian and a computer skills instructor. So she and I both are doing class prep at the same time we're doing this. Or not. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to open with a statement that I created to explain. It's a very personal statement, and I speak for myself and not for the other members of the panel or the other, you know, any of the other signers of this document. And similarly, I'd like to say, as we read the script, we're reading the words of others, including our own words. And, you know, the words that we read may or may not reflect our own personal beliefs or ideas or feelings or experience. But I thought that my introduction might introduce you to what I saw possible out of this this document that we created. And I'd also like to say as a disclaimer that I really had very little to do. I may be the moderator of the panel and I may have, you know, I just put it on the docket. Basically, Paula and Lori are the ones that did most of the work for this session. And I did very little work on the document itself, but I had a very personal and special experience around the document that I wanted to share with you. So I'll go ahead and start. And then we're going to go into the reading of the script, and then afterwards, several of the panel members have personal statements that they'd like to make, and then we'll take questions from the audience.
Explain what we're
going to
do.
Oh. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought someone else was going to read the intro.
I'll read the script.
Okay. The script is basically taken from a conversation that happened online after Relief Society President Julie Beck's talk in conference. And it took place in concert with the conversation that was happening in the larger LDS community online. And so we were not the only ones having this conversation. We just weren't doing it publicly. I mean, there was a really rich debate going on online on blogs and in other discussion forums. But so what Lori and Paula did was to take emails that, you know, the email conversation and condense it down to show the process by which this document got created, put up on a website, and then, you know, kind of our experience, our feelings about it as it went on. So we will be reading, you know, an extremely condensed, it was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of emails, an extremely condensed version of this conversation that took place. And so you'll be getting a snapshot of the process that through which we went to create the document. being a part of the creation of www.whatwomenknow.org has been an incredible experience for me. It has also been very interesting to see the variety of responses we've gotten and the meaning that people have made from our activities. One of my favorites goes something like this, quote, well, it's not a quote, but you know, I've tried to find out the name of the person who bought this website, but I can't. Only a coward or someone hiding their true agenda would buy a website through domains by proxy. The truth, of course, is that the person who bought the domain name is a grandmother who knows very little about how such things work and was acting on the advice of the salesperson who sold her the site. So there was no meaning beyond just that. And there are also those who think we should immediately be disciplined by the church. The other end of the spectrum, of course, includes responses that were filled with gratitude for expanding the conversation and drawing others into it. My main concern has been with communication. Some, many, though certainly not all LDS women, have had the experience of not being heard. Or perhaps more accurately, they have felt as if their experiences themselves haven't been heard and remain unrecognized as a legitimate expression of what constitutes the Mormon woman's experience. Some of us bemoan a lack of depth in studying and interpreting LDS scripture. For example, the stripling warrior story from the Book of Mormon, which has turned out to be the most controversial part of our statement. Others are saddened by experiences of the benign patriarchy as less than benign, despite institutional efforts to improve the interface between male leaders and female church members. Many of us are single, widowed, and divorced, and do not fit into the two-parent, middle-class, white family formula. Some of us work with battered women and women who have otherwise been victimized, while yet others have experienced sexual assault and domestic violence firsthand. Therefore, stories or pronouncements from church leaders at the highest levels that fail to recognize our lived experiences end up with people creating new multidimensional dialogues. Despite those of us who accuse us of not supporting our leaders, specifically President Beck and the President Hinckley, who many of our critics believe directly approve her talk, I argue that we are supporting President Beck and the LDS Church by expanding her audience and encouraging connections to take place between women and men in different places who have had vastly different experiences. Our intentions have been misunderstood, however, because discourse in the LDS Church has culturally developed so that it goes in one direction only, flowing out from the fountain of authority, from men with greater authority to men with lesser authority to women with very little authority to make institutional pronouncements in the name of God. This is not meant to sound sarcastic or angry. It is merely an academic observation that Mormonism struggles with knowing how to recognize women's voices institutionally. Women have power in the LDS Church, especially at the local level, but in Mormonism, power is different from authority, which is institutionally recognized as a function of male priesthood. Therefore, many who have written to criticize, even demonize us, have done so because they feel that a public response to public institutional discourse is disrespectful. It breaks with tradition and with authoritarian rules of order, which traditionally recognize only a private individual response. In part, this occurs because of the belief in Mormonism that revelation from God can only happen for the church and the world as a whole as it comes from the office of the president of the church. In addition, there is a deep sense of order enacted in Mormonism, so that writing a letter to the prophet almost always generates a form letter referring the author to her or his bishop or other local authority, with the presumption that local leaders will handle any issue based on policies developed in Salt Lake.
You're talking so fast we can't understand you.
Oh, okay. Thank you. The process is such that those in authority will contact those directly above them in authority to get answers to questions or to address specific issues that arise. However, individuals are strongly discouraged from going above their most immediate local leaders for any reason. Because of this convention, we at WWK have smiled wryly at the repeated question posed by critics asking why we didn't write to President Beck or President Hinckley privately to express our concerns about the talk, which presumes, of course, that we did not do so. In fact, some of us actually have written church leaders in the past and received the above response. Similarly, some of us have also written to President Beck about her talk and have not yet received replies. We are still hoping. Creating a dialogue to enrich the usual unilateral discourse makes many people uncomfortable. We believe, however, that respectful, thoughtful discussions are a legitimate way to touch, move, and inspire ourselves and others. Therefore, one of the most important things we have done is to simply open up the discourse as respectfully as we can. I submit that the women and men who wrote to condemn us would have been less likely to consider President Beck's talk as seriously as they have done had we not been a part of initiating a wider conversation that has encouraged us all to think, question, and expand her comments. This is particularly evident on the Mormon-related blogs, where President Beck's talk and the discussion it has generated has continued to lead to powerful contemplation about what it means to be a Mormon, to be a woman or a man, and to be a human being. There has been no official LDS Church response to WWK, and none of us has had any, quote, trouble or threats of church discipline. However, because we are scattered all over the U.S., many of us report and receive reports from others that local leaders have made it a point to present lessons based on President Beck's talk during the once-monthly Joint Relief Society priesthood meeting, which seems to us to be a direct result of the broader response the talk generated online and in personal conversation. It is certainly an unusual move in a mixed-gender audience where talks of male church authorities are usually utilized and talks by women are rarely, if ever, employed. This suggests at least local efforts to reinforce the authority of her calling and the institutional church's support of the ideas she expressed. In addition, M. Russell Ballard, one of the senior members of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, recently publicly challenged BYU Hawaii students to take to the blogs and other online forums to discuss and defend their faith. We might speculate that this is also a welcome consequence of the discussion we have helped generate, in addition, of course, to the drubbing Mormonism was taking at the time in political commentary. Finally, the church held a worldwide training meeting in order to indirectly address some of the responses generated by President Beck's talk. It is impossible for me to imagine that this workshop would have taken place had Mormons of all types not gathered to publicly debate the implications and consequences of President Beck's ideas. One of the most important parts of this experience for me has been to realize the ways in which the language used to describe and explain Mormon women actually literally creates us. If our language includes the diversity of Mormon women's lived experience, then who we are is broader and more abundant than the picture created by language that is narrow and exclusive. Ultimately, from my perspective, President Beck's talk wasn't wrong, it was only incomplete, as talks of this kind always are. We recognize that she was limited by time and context, and I would never expect her to speak extensively to all possible permutations of LDS women's experience. However, we also recognize her influence as the leader of a worldwide organization of women who, when she speaks publicly in that capacity, claims to speak to millions of women. Therefore, WWK is not a rebuttal or a critique, from my perspective, but an expansion of the conversation she was gracious enough to start for us. In fact, WWK and the responses to it, both positive and negative, have left me feeling more, as opposed to less, grounded in my sense of being a Mormon woman and closer to those LDS women who are different from me, for whom President Beck's talk resonated. By seeing how I have the same concerns as other women with Mormon backgrounds and even beyond Mormonism, WWK has promoted sisterhood for me in ways I had not seen possible.
This quote from the Salt Lake Tribune just came through, and I really thought it was a joke. I can't believe nobody has mentioned it here yet. Like this? This quote from the Salt Lake Tribune just came through, and I really thought it was a joke. I can't believe nobody has mentioned it here yet. Perhaps the most controversial speaker on Sunday was Julie Beck, the new president of the church's All-Women Relief Society, who talked about the powerful influence of motherhood. Faithful Mormon women want children and do not delay childbearing, Beck said, quoting the late LDS President Ezra Taft Benson, "Children, not possessions, not position, not prestige, are our greatest jewels. Mormon mothers honor their sacred covenants by bringing daughters to their church," quoting Beck, "in clean and iron dresses with their hair brushed to perfection. Their sons wear white shirts and ties and have missionary haircuts," unquote, Beck said. "They establish a good climate where children can be nourished physically and spiritually." Quote, "Another word for nurturing is homemaking," said Beck. "It includes cooking, washing clothes and dishes, and keeping an orderly house," unquote. In partnership with her husbands, mothers, quote, "plan for missions, temple marriages, and education," she said. These women, quote, "are selective about their own activities and involvement to conserve their limited strength in order to maximize their influence where it matters most." The speech triggered a firestorm of criticism on the Mormon weblog timesandseasons.org from listeners who objected to Beck's stereotyping of women's roles or guilt-inducing comments about the necessity of being the best mothers in the world, unquote. What do you all think about this? Anybody know anything about Sister Beck? Wendy.
It's a perfect example of a woman who perpetuates the assumptions of men in power because she has little or no power of her own. She's grown up in a classist and sexist bubble. She does not seem to have considered the fact that, one, not all women have a choice whether to work outside the home, two, work and mothering are not mutually exclusive, three, physical appearance is more directly related to culture and economic resources than to the God-given role of mother. Martin.
Why weren't the husbands also admonished to work around the house? Are men ever told they aren't fulfilling their duties if they don't change their own oil? And why the emphasis on superficial outer stuff? I was thinking about a family story. One of my grandfather's sisters was very musical and apparently fairly impaired about doing housework. In the middle of hanging out the clothes, she'd run in and start playing the piano or the violin because she thought of something she wanted to try. The rest of the family kind of tisked about the way the house always looked because she was more interested in her music. But her kids all played instruments, and the later generations also. At least someone remembers her. No one tells stories about the good housekeepers. Paula.
I am troubled even further by the link between child-rearing and homemaking, which seems here to be so readily identified with tidiness. How is that meaningful interaction with kids? Are they moving from the obviously flawed idea that only women can instill healthy morality to only a woman can wash a dish? Sarah.
I think we're definitely seeing a deliberate message. They cannot acknowledge that for most families in this economy, women have to work, at least part-time. I'm hearing more and more that the younger women are simply saying no to certain church jobs and yes to outside-the-home jobs. The availability of women is shrinking, and I think they are in a panic about it. I feel great empathy and concern for those women who still believe that with enough faith, enough tithing, enough patting on the head from a priesthood leader, they can do it all soon.
I watched conference from upstairs in my bedroom. During Beck's talk, I yelled, "Are you listening to this?" Before my husband could answer, my daughter's voice exploded through the house. "I'm listening, and this is a bunch of bleep!" Just about that same time, my phone alerted me that I had a text message. It was from my son, who wrote, "Through the walls I could hear conference blaring. Did you just hear that sexist, misogynistic, paranoid bleep about women?" I guess my work as mother is done. Evolved more than that. Benson's talk to mothers was given 20 years ago. So little progress in all that time. I think we've actually regressed with this latest installment. As one of millions of mothers who really know, Becky.
Not only was it infuriating to read some of the comments, I'm mad at myself for devoting so much time and energy to this bleep talk. I mean, if Beck was calling on women to be more Christ-like, I could think, yeah, I could work on that. I know I fall short. But to have Beck use the pulpit to tell us all to be the best homemakers on top of all the other stuff we're supposed to be the best at from the Relief Society broadcast a few weeks before just made me popping mad. Mary Ellen.
I am listening to the replay right now. Several folks have commented on the women who know, which was really a device Beck used to denote women who have an understanding of the plan. If you are having a problem with the restrictive gender roles provided by the church, then you'll probably be offended by the talk. But to be honest, it is exactly what you would expect from leadership of the church. Reading between the lines, she's promoting the idea that you have to put your children first where possible, and you have to invest in them and teach them the gospel. Another theme is the idea that women's power is as a parent rather than the power of the priesthood. Is it patently offensive to me? Not really. It doesn't define me, and in fact, it validates much of what I do as a parent. I can certainly see where it would make some absolutely go ballistic. Of course, I should also remind you that I haven't been in Relief Society in almost a year because I teach the Sunbeams. Diane.
Point's well taken, Diane. I don't want to pick Sister Beck's talk apart. I think that what I find most objectionable is the tone. I didn't feel encouraged or inspired to be a better person. I didn't feel loved or appreciated or valued. It was just one more time when I felt like I wasn't measuring up, that I wasn't working hard enough or exercising enough faith, that I didn't and couldn't belong. I felt like an oddball at church my entire life, and no matter what I've done to try to fit in or to be acceptable, it has never worked. As for my relationship with Jesus, I feel completely at peace, that I am accepted and loved just as I am. My distress and frustration and hurt are a result of the disconnect between my relationship with Jesus and the church he supposedly guides. Becky.
Even my decidedly non-feminist, only ever wanted to be a stay-at-home mom sister was highly annoyed by this talk. Jane Ann.
It's heartening to read that Julie Beck's talk was the most controversial. That means that people are expressing some objections. I wonder what has happened to cause the Tribune reporter to describe it this way. Is she reporting that people she knows find it controversial, or is there some tangible larger controversy going on about it, Kay?
I think that in part she was basing this on the reactions of the blogs. Just go to the maintimesandseasons.org page and you'll find lots of links to other discussions today. Paula.
How do you ladies feel about power and motherhood, Sue?
I love this question, Sue. After reading the review of Beck's speech, I'm struck with how Beck uses the word power by asking us to develop our domestic power as if that were the only kind of power to which women have a right or which they need to survive. Beck's message is as much propaganda as the familiar but specious statement, "The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world." If that statement were true, the balance of economic and political power would be in female hands, and I think we know it's not. So, Sue, the way I feel about the power of motherhood is that it's very limited, and a concept that's often used specifically to distract us from the limitations and vulnerabilities women accept if they devote themselves exclusively to domesticity. Shana.
I agree with you. It is a shame that women are encouraged to limit, in fact, cage up their talents and spiritual gifts. It is a sorry situation, but many women love the church and so are willing to be whoever they are told to be. Then depression, pills, and stepped-up anger for way too many. Suzanne.
Julie Beck's speech is only one of many instances in which the church sets up feminists as anti-motherhood. Of course, it's a rhetorical strategy. The feminist motherhood dichotomy works only on a population in which it has assumed the status of common knowledge. This is true for some, but not all LDS women, which is why Julie Beck's address arouses such ire. In fact, as far as the church is concerned, it's the controversy over this very issue that creates the need for rhetoric like Julie Beck's. The general authorities totally get that feminist ideas have gained ground in American culture. If they didn't, they wouldn't work so hard to portray feminists as child-hating, pro-abortion fanatics. Clearly, an editorial undermining the feminist mother dichotomy is needed. Another point you might consider is that the usual motherhood rhetoric is less effective than the church realizes. According to Martha Nibley Beck, points of view like Becky's are not uncommon. Her dissertation suggests that many Mormon women see themselves as alone and that they don't believe they have the right to challenge the dominant discourse. Consequently, the dominant discourse on Mormon women remains unchallenged, creating the impression that these oddballs don't exist when there's a whole community of them out there. Shana.
You know, things really have gotten better in the last 25 years, but it takes something like this getting abruptly, dramatically, and conspicuously worse to make it clear. Once again, your analysis is right on the money. Levina.
I have been thinking about Julie Beck's talks, both in women's conference and in general conference. I've read a little on the Blogernacle, but that is mostly tremendously unhelpful to me. It does seem to me there could be a measured feminist response to Julie's talks. Julie Beck can get 80% of her stuff right, but the 20% that is wrong is so very wrong that it can do great, great damage to LDS women and girls. I think it is well and good to encourage marriage and motherhood. I think telling LDS women that they need to be better than everyone else is terribly harmful. To repeat this several times in the course of one talk is criminal. Plus, I'm not even sure she got 80% right. She came close to saying things that were meaningful, came close to saying some profound things, but in its entirety, the talk fell so far short that it left me somewhat dazzled by its doublespeak. And again, there was this emphasis on being the best. Best compared to what? To whom? Mainly, it was like a whip against collective women's souls. Cheryl.
Where do you think that this feminist response could be printed? Or what you want to have on a blog, or even a website?
Are we giving Beck too much power when we respond to her and the men behind her message? We directly strengthen their discourse. Their discourse, their choice of topics, their framing of the issues, their vision of who Mormon women are and what we want. As Carol Gilligan says, the seemingly impossible task is to tell a new story. In my opinion, the better tactic is to create something positive and inspirational for ourselves and our daughters. Set the terms of the public discourse so that we have a hand in shaping the conversation. Marty.
I agree with the direction of what you're saying, Marty. I see a declaration as an empowering thing for those women who remain silent for fear of reprisal. I have found that discovering others like me is a very important step in taking back one's power. It doesn't have to rail against Beck. It can be a positive affirmation. This is how we have chosen to live our lives and still be part of the Mormon community, or not.
Sue.
I agree with you, Sue, that declaring ourselves is a powerful step for those of us who are silent out of fear. I acknowledge that there is also wisdom in protest. It's just not my style. It puts me right back into that space of begging to be listened to by someone with more authority than I. I'll be interested in seeing a document that starts from where we want to be instead of where we don't want to be. Something affirmative that can be repeated until it just seems like it's been common sense all along. If we were to write several strong affirmative statements about women, then it might have a positive, forward-thinking impact on the culture. Marty.
How about something like the following? Wise women know that the power of neither womanhood nor motherhood can be reduced to the performance of narrowly prescribed tasks. Wise women know that partnership is illusory when there is a fundamental imbalance in decision-making power. Wise women know that responsible family planning is essential for a happy home. Wise women know that when you empower women, you empower a community. Lori.
After I read Beck's talk, I thought that it was pretty much the same old stuff. The place she really stepped off into the mud was in her paragraphs on house cleaning. I do think that her comments in that realm reflect an appalling class and gender bias. If Beck were addressing a worldwide church, she would have considered the women whose housework includes hauling muddy water long distances and spending half a day collecting firewood instead of shopping for needless luxuries or going to school. I want to shout out, cleanliness is next to indoor plumbing. We use physical cleanliness as synonymous with moral cleanliness. People who look clean all the time have access to resources, or they spend half their day trying to manage dirt. Marty.
I love this wider world approach, a reality check, if you will. Lori.
It's important, I think, to read Beck's piece charitably. Beck does make some good points. I believe in having children, for instance. But the best mothering in the world will not always produce the children you thought you wanted, for good and bad. Whatever you feel about yourself has to transcend that. Transcend mothering. Transcend wifing. Transcend being single. Transcend being beautiful or ugly. I believe in housework, but housework is what grown-ups do and is not gender-specific. When housework becomes gender-specific, or stays that way, it becomes political. Please continue to write. After we combine all the posts, we'll post that combination, and we can go from there. Cheryl.
I I've just read some of Beck's apologists on the blogs. Why do we bother, Lori?
Why do we bother? Good question. Perhaps we are aiming for the audience on the edge, people like ourselves years ago, who would have taken comfort in a response. Another reason I would like us to bother is because I want to be one of the people who gets to read it, Marty.
I need to do this for me, and I need to do it for others. This is my service. Not expecting anything back, but serving nonetheless. Cheryl.
Who is our audience? What is our goal? I do not believe the Brethren care one iota about what women think. Our audience should be women. Helen.
I'm going to work on combining our comments with Marty and anyone else who wants to chime in. If you have more thoughts, keep sending them on. Cheryl.
I'm curious to know how you feel about how one does activism in Mormondom. Is it best to move the women of the church along gently, gently, as someone once said of Exponent 2's approach? Or is it better to confront issues directly, even if we seem to be challenging leaders? Given Beck's recent remarks, I'm not sure either approach has done any good. On the other hand, as I also pointed out, the number of people who have responded negatively to her talk must mean that there has been some movement among the membership. Lori.
Was it Laurel Thatcher Ulrich who said, "Well-behaved women never make history"? The gently, gently way has gotten us hardly anywhere. I say find a righteous point and shout it. Stephanie.
I agree with this. I think the real question you have to ask yourselves is how much personal sacrifice do you want to make by going public? Sue.
We have listened and read everyone's comments from the beginning. I created a document that included every statement that had been offered and tied it all together with other comments in a prose piece. Marnie spent 2 days cutting them, trying to maintain as many of everyone's comments as she could. With your help, we have worked hard at paring it down to something that flows smoothly and fits together coherently. In our opinion, this piece is not just a response to Beck's talk. This is an affirmative statement of what we think many of us stand for as women and sisters. It was prompted by Beck's talk, but it's not a direct rebuttal. We want the piece to stand by itself. We now see this piece as having a long publication life, with, hopefully, signatures being added to it all the time, one woman at a time. To us, gathering signatures is, in and of itself, a political act. It means that each one of the women who would potentially sign such a document would read each one of the statements and think hard about the risk of signing such a statement. It will also get women thinking about the fear of ostracism or loss that keeps us all from joining together. To this end, we have changed the introduction so that it is open for anyone to sign. Who would be willing to sign this document if it was placed in a permanent place on the internet? So far, we think we have about 5 or 6 signers. Please continue to offer titles. Comments? Cheryl.
Having read your draft, I am grateful to you for expressing so well what many of us feel about these issues. Okay.
I love the piece. It's strong and powerful and quiet. I think this quiet, sensible approach is harder to dismiss. Mary Ellen.
Sorry, I've been too busy cleaning and ironing to respond. Just kidding. I've actually been playing Candyland and hide and seek with my son in the front room, and the front room is a complete mess. Not a single cushion is on the couch or a toy in its proper place. But we've been having a lot of fun, and I've been getting a lot of big smooches from him. Seriously, though, great job, Wendy.
The ironic thing about these statements is that if you show the list to most American women on the street, they would say, "So what about this? It's something we don't already know." They would, of course, not realize that it's response to rhetoric that is 40 years behind the times. Marty.
I think it needs a website, Sue.
We can buy a domain name. I like some sort of permutation of women who know or what wise women know. Janet.
Thank you for this give-and-take dialogue on logistics. Cheryl, I appreciate all of you who take the time to contribute, and we hope that everyone feels in some way included. We did not want to leave any person or idea out. What Women Know is the title. Marnie.
This is absolutely wonderful. Not only is the content thoughtful and formidable, but it's a model of how such a dialogue should be invited and carried on. I'm honored to have my name on it. Lavina.
You can add my name, too, Wendy.
I'll sign two. Janet.
As far as I'm concerned, the process of creating and making and creating and reading and sharing is what I'm after. I think it will actually be happier if this gets no visible press, but gets transferred underground from woman to woman, each of whom reads it and asks herself, one, do I feel comfortable signing this? Two, why or why not? Three, if some of these paragraphs trouble me, why do they trouble me, and where do I stand on these issues? Where do I stand on other issues? Four, if I agree with what is said here, but I am still reluctant to sign, what is going on? Five, am I afraid that there will be consequences to signing? If so, what consequences? And are they reasonable and fair? For instance, a loss of temple recommend, community standing, family connections, church-related position or employment. Six, in what ways do these statements support or differ from what I am being told I should believe? Marty.
Let's get this puppy up on the website, Lori.
It's up, Paula. What Women Know. In October 2007, Julie B. Beck, president of the Latter-day Saint Women's Organization, the Relief Society, gave a speech in the semi-annual Worldwide General Conference titled Mothers Who Know. Beck's focus on LDS families, and more particularly on the role and influence of mothers, is a subject close to our hearts. Who are we? We are women who differ in age, income, race, ethnicity, and marital status. Many of us are mothers, some with exceptionally large families. Some of us are grandmothers and great-grandmothers many times over. Some are young mothers with infants and elementary-age children. Others of us, for reasons of biology, opportunity, or choice, do not have children. Some of us have never married. Some are single because of divorce or widowhood. A few of us have been with the same partner more than 50 years. We all work, paid or unpaid, both inside and outside our homes. We share many decades of church service among us. In fact, our LDS background is our common denominator. Several ideas within the body of President Beck's talk conflict with our inspiration and experience. We are authors of our own lives, and this is a story we know to be true.
Fathers, as well as mothers, men as well as women, are called to nurture. Nurturing is not confined to mothering or housekeeping, but is a universal attribute that communicates patience, peacefulness, and care.
Individuals and relationships flourish when we are able to share not only our strengths, but also our mutual imperfections and needs. It is difficult to be compassionate with ourselves and others when we internalize injunctions to perform. For example, the highest performing sister missionary, the best homemaker in the world, the most patient and loving mother. Motherhood and sisterhood cannot be reduced to the performance of narrowly prescribed tasks, but emerge from who we know ourselves to be.
Cleanliness depends upon access to resources and has more to do with priorities than purity of heart. We do not place the additional burden of outward appearances on our sisters who are hauling fuel and water long distances, who are struggling with poverty, isolation, or ill health, or who choose values that take precedence over orderly living quarters and polished looks.
Housework is something that grown-ups do and that children learn by example and instruction. Unfortunately, women and girls still perform the bulk of the world's low-paid and unpaid labor, including housework, often at the expense of their own education, leadership, creativity, health, and well-being. Men and boys who share care work and household responsibilities make it possible for all family members to live happier, more fulfilling lives.
We reverence the responsibility to choose how, when, and whether we become parents. Many of us have adoptive and foster children and grandchildren from diverse ethnicities and cultures. We have given birth to children who range widely on every dimension, from personality, appearance, and sexual identity to physical, social, and mental ability. No matter what their differences, we care for them all.
Effective parenting is a learned behavior, and as parents, we learn and grow with each child. Children come with their own gifts, challenges, and freedom of choice. We reject teachings that encourage women to shoulder ultimate responsibility for every aspect of child-rearing and family life, and to take on shame and guilt when things do not go according to plan.
The choice to have children does not rule out other avenues of influence and power. By valuing ourselves as lifelong achievers, apart from our roles as mothers, friends, partners, sisters, aunts, and grandmothers, we stand for creativity, public service, competence, and growth. We take joy in the collective contributions we make in the fields of government, medicine, academia, law, journalism, human services, business, art, healthcare advocacy, music, technology, child development, science, and one we forgot, education.
When it comes to employment, most women prefer the luxury of choice to the limitations of necessity. Women-friendly policies such as flex time and comparable pay for women and men, access to health care, family leave for births and care work, and affordable, high-quality child care give all of us, single or partnered, impoverished or privileged, greater choice in how to support ourselves and our families.
We work because we want to, because we need to, and because we have no other choice. We know that children are more important than possessions, position, and prestige. That's in quotes from the talk. Some of us have been thrust into the position of sole economic support of our children through desertion, divorce, domestic violence, or death. Indeed, too many of us have learned that we are just one fully employed male away from poverty.
Men are our fathers, sons, brothers, partners, lovers, and friends. Many of them also struggle within a system that equates leadership with hierarchy and domination. We distrust separate but equal rhetoric. Anyone who is regularly reminded that she is equally important is probably not. Partnership is illusory without equal decision-making power.
We have discovered that healthy relationships are equitable relationships. A relationship that is balanced in terms of economic and emotional power is safer and more resilient than a relationship in which one partner holds most or all of the power. Women with active support networks and marketable skills have greater options, not only in relationships, but in life.
We claim the life-affirming powers of spirit and wisdom and reject the glorification of violence in all its forms. We are filled with unutterable sadness by the Book of Mormon's story of more than 2,000 young soldiers whose mothers teach them that faith in God will preserve them in battles in which they kill other mothers' children. This is not a success story. It is a story of the failure of human relationships and the horrors of war. In a world that has grown increasingly violent, we believe that one of the most important passages in LDS Scripture is Doctrine and Covenants 98:16. Therefore, renounce war and proclaim peace.
Our roles as mothers, sisters, daughters, partners, and friends are just a few of the many parts we will play in the course of our lives. We may influence hundreds, perhaps thousands of lives, but we are not our roles. We are created in the image of the divine, people of worth in our own right, in our choices, in our individuality, and in our belief that the life story we are ultimately responsible for is our own.
What women know is already forwarded back to me, so it's making the rounds quickly, Paula.
For those of you who follow the LDS Watermackle, you will notice that the flaming has begun. Truly, I think engaging in flame wars is counterproductive. However, you must, of course, do as you see best. But my experience with flame wars is that no one is convinced of anything that they didn't believe beforehand, and a lot of anger and spite is served up along the way. My advice is to lay low, at least for a bit. If any of you feel like you have to respond to some of the anger and vitriol, think again. Cheryl.
Our statement, despite what people may say, is not an attack on Beck. It's a commentary on her public discourse. Reasonable people on both the right and left and everywhere in between accept that a public speech is open to commentary. Marty.
Here are most of the arguments that I've seen brought up. Clearly there are some common issues, such as the anti-war sentiment of the stripling warriors, the efficacy and correctness of publishing an open letter to a church leader in the first place, the never-ending and not surprising accusations that feminists are not much better than Satan incarnate, the way they stir up the pot and cause problems, so they can be dismissed because they're all doomed to burn in the end, etc. Perhaps these things get you thinking about talking points for an FAQ section on the website. Laura.
In the FAQ, I think we need to punctuate Beck's role as head of the LDS Women's Organization, and that because of that role, her comments in the general church meeting are never interpreted to be solely her own, particularly if all of the talks are in some way correlated. Two, she is in many ways our only voice within the patriarchal structure of the church, which means the weight falls on her to accurately speak to our experience. Unless her role is not to speak to our experience, but only to prescribe what our experience ought to be. Our document is a reminder that there are other views that are not always, read that rarely, reflected in church discourse. For the purposes of the FAQs, the more succinct and less apologetic, the better. Lori.
I've cut and pasted today's suggestions and corrections into the FAQ document and will work on it more tonight. I agree, an apologetic tone is inappropriate. And perhaps we could address the agenda thing by saying how puzzled we are that people insist we must have one beyond simply speaking our truth. Mary Ellen.
What Women Know, FAQs. We acknowledge President Beck's remarks on the significance of mothering, the importance of honoring... Number one, critics accuse you of mounting a personal attack against Julie Beck. We acknowledge President Beck's remarks on the significance of mothering, the importance of honoring ordinances, and the responsibility for nurturing, teaching, and leading children. However, many of us feel that our experiences are not reflected often enough in official texts and pronouncements from the pulpit. We believe that women are more complicated and diverse, and our situations more challenging and nuanced than is generally recognized.
Two. Some readers are concerned about your treatment of the stripling warrior story. Why did you include that statement?
Well, first of all, she brought it up. That's how Sister Beck opened her talk.
We wanted to remind ourselves that this is, first and foremost, an account about teen soldiers who have to go to war because there are few grown men left to do so, and because their fathers had taken a vow of nonviolence. It is a story of horrible necessity and a brutal experience. War hardens and maims its participants, both physically and emotionally. Survivors are often changed for life. Even though the young fighters prevailed and gave their mothers credit for instilling in them their exceptional faith, we do not pretend their wartime experience did not come at a terrible cost. Many of the contributors to this document have family and loved ones serving in the military. We are grateful when they return alive, but we cannot forget that others die daily in violent conflicts.
Number three, critics argue that your statement's introduction specifically references President Beck's talk, but you do not directly address the issues in her talk. Why is this? We do not disagree with every point that President Beck makes. Our statement concerns President Beck's talk only insofar as we have used it as a springboard for collaborative discussion of our lived experience.
Four, what do you hope to achieve with this open letter? This isn't a letter. This statement represents our dialogue with each other, which we hoped would spur larger discussions. We initiate conversations to identify our strengths, become more explicit about our values, and reduce feelings of isolation and inadequacy. For us, the significance of this project is the process of thinking, questioning, and taking responsibility for our own lives.
Five, who are you and what is your agenda? We are women who regularly discuss religion and women's issues. As a group, we wanted to frame the discussion regarding women more expansively. Few seem to be doing this, so we decided to do it on our own. If people read our work and feel acknowledged, supported, sustained, understood, challenged, or spiritually nourished, we are satisfied our statement has served its purpose.
6. What do you say to critics who believe that you are espousing ideas contrary to church doctrine, specifically that you are condoning the choice for husbands and wives to forego childbearing? We acknowledge that people's circumstances vary significantly in a worldwide church. For example, in many areas of the world where AIDS is rampant, where access to contraceptives is limited, and where children suffer and die due to inadequate health care and nutrition, many parents struggle with family planning choices that their more privileged peers seldom have to face. We are also aware that it is not universally possible for everyone who wants children to do so. We agree with church policy that these decisions are private matters.
Some critics write you off as stereotypical, silly, shrill, bitchy, bra-burning, strident, whiny, man-hating, frigid, axe-grinding, hysterical, humorless, godless, angry feminazis. Do you have a response to them?
No!
The introduction to your letter says that your inspiration and experience are different from those of President Beck. Your critics interpret this as saying that your views are superior to those of church leaders. We speak only for ourselves, based on our own inspiration and experience. We are not competing with or comparing ourselves to general authorities or to President Beck. We hope that the majority of readers will view our statement as a sincere expression of our experiences and our hopes for women everywhere.
And 9, are you limiting who can sign your document? No, there is really no way for us to do this. We don't control who links to our statement or the website.
The number of visitors we've had so far is amazing. Cheryl.
We have received a minimal number of emails from people who disagree with our statement. I especially like this one from a man.
I love to play the heavy. Sister Beck spoke the truth. I'm sorry that so many people have been beguiled to sign such a piece of rubbish. You're well on the road to apostasy if you don't repent. You should be glad that I'm not your ecclesiastical leader.
When the respondent said so many people have been beguiled to sign, at that point, about within a week of putting the website up, we had about 300 signatures. And we're now up to 600 and closer to 700, I think. Here are some positive responses from our new signers.
I support this statement 100%. Please do add my name to the list. May I ask what you plan on doing with this? Will it be presented to the First Presidency, or at least to Sister Beck to show her that she hurt, not helped, the women of the church by homogenizing all of them into an unrecognizable individual rather than the richly diverse group of human beings that we are? Thank you for doing this. I have been fighting my ward, which insists on repeating Beck's speech nearly word for word at every opportunity. Thank you again for what you have done. Beck's speech made me feel utterly alone among the women in the LDS Church. It warms my heart and my testimony to know that I am not alone.
I was impressed with the depth and breadth of its truthfulness for me. I feel like this statement represents me and my views far more closely than anything that has come from the church offices in a very long time.
I am so pleased someone has voiced this concern so eloquently. I just wish I knew more people I could forward it to without fear of reprisal. Sad commentary on our system.
I feel so confused. I am truly naive. I made the mistake of going to Times and Seasons, and it is an unreal experience to see myself as a signer of a document called stupid, apostate, foolish, etc. My academic voice is saying, wow, what's really interesting here is the way in which the discussion was mostly about looking at general authority statements about childbearing. I mean, it feels so weird to realize the extent to which people really live and die by a word here, a word there, spoken by strangers who don't know them, about intimate aspects of our lives. It's surreal. Dumb.
I have been surprised at my own vulnerability. I think it's because I've been teaching gospel doctrine. Every time I read our document, I think, my heavens, what is the fuss? The document shouldn't have been necessary. Cheryl.
I am totally surprised by how angry people are. Totally. When Peggy Fletcher Stack of the Tribune told me over the phone that Beck's talk had generated quite a lot of discussion, I said naively, that's wonderful. No, she said, not the good kind. The divisive kind. The kind where people take sides and nobody listens to each other. This kind of for-against approach is not good for people's mental health, especially mine, Marty.
It looks as though we'll have about 50 signatures to add today when I've waded through them. In the meantime, here are some of our nastier replies for your reading pleasure, Paula.
I basically think you're crazy and or looking for attention. What you're doing is wrong. You've missed the point of Beck's talk completely. You understand very little. It's obvious. You need to stop filling others' heads with your garbage. Why do you set up a website? Because you feel the need to have followers. Because you don't want to feel this way all by yourself. It sounds like Satan to me. You need to think about it.
Are they all negative?
No, but the really fun ones are. Here are a few of the recent positive messages. Paula.
I was upset about the barefoot and pregnant type comments by Sister Beck. Women are more than that. In my lifetime, I have worked as a mother, a military air traffic controller, managed small offices, and now I'm serving as a home missionary. I worked because I had to, not because I wanted to.
I learned of the website from a friend and passed it on to sisters and friends. I love this statement. I can just hear the early women of the church, Eliza R. Snow, Emma Hale, Emmeline Wells, uniting and uttering these same truths. Thank you.
I feel that we are back to square one. What happened to all the advances we made with previous Relief Society general presidencies?
My favorite part of this declaration is where it points out that if you have to keep reminding someone that they're equal, they probably aren't. Ouch, that's true.
Thank you all for your work on this project. I have to believe it will make a difference.
I lend my voice to that of many others who love this gospel, want to be part of it, and hold the hope that someday my opinion will matter more in the LDS Church.
Now I'm going to turn the time over to the rest of the panel who have comments.
I am the oddball who has never, I know it's hard to believe, but I've never fit into a ward that I've been in or a young women's group that I've been in. And another thing that's a real sticking point for me is being equated to a role. I hate that we are described as our roles. I am not a role. I mean, I play different roles throughout my life, but that is not who I am. I'm Heavenly Father's daughter, and I'm Jesus' sister. And that's the most important part of who I am. And I really, that's why I really felt strongly about joining and adding my little two cents worth. All my life, I've been trying to stick with the church and make a difference and go to Relief Society and speak up and try to do my bit to make sure that people remember that the Savior is at the center of the gospel. And I felt such profound sadness when I heard her talk and read it again, that I had been trying to do this, you know, to represent the Savior and trying to speak up, and
I apparently no longer was welcome at Relief Society because we were hearing again, if you are XYZ, then you're good. And if you don't fit into those roles, nurturing, homemaker type, then you don't belong. I literally felt disinvited. And I haven't been to Relief Society since. And it's mostly because I'm so sad. I love a lot of the women in there, the ones that I know, and would love to have a friendship with them, but I'm doing the weighing cost-benefit analysis here, and it's just not worth it to be so angry or hurt or sad every time I come out of a Relief Society meeting. And my spiritual experience was that I literally felt Jesus releasing me from that, promise that I had made to him 30 years ago when I went on my mission to Italy, that I would always speak for him. And I felt that he was that for me as well, and that I didn't need to go to any place where I felt so unwelcome and so unloved.
In my last ward, every time I was asked to give a sacrament talk, they gave me one of Julie Beck's to use as a text. And so I've had a long and uncomfortable relationship with some of the things that she has to say. I had a really powerful, visceral body reaction to this talk. And the only thing that I could compare it to was a few times in my life where I know I'm going to throw up. I just don't know when it's going to happen. I knew that I had to say something about how this talk didn't line up with my experience as a Mormon woman. And I'm glad that there was this avenue that we created together to express some of the things that we felt and talking about how our lives converged or differed from the example that President Beck held up to us in that particular conference talk. And one of the things that that occurred to me was President Beck came out of the Young Women's Organization, and I think perhaps she was more in the vein of talking to young women who have a lot of these life choices and decisions ahead of them, rather than to adult women who have a few more miles on their odometer. And so I think that was one thing that occurred to me, that perhaps it was time to recalibrate. And, you know, if you're talking to a worldwide audience of women ages 18 and up, you might need to think about what you say and how that's going to be received, not only within the U.S., but worldwide as well. And the other thing that was interesting was I had some conversations with my mother about this, she's generally more conservative than I am, but she was also really bothered by this talk, to the point of writing her own letter to President Beck about the same time that all of us were putting together the What Women Know statement. And one of her points was that Relief Society in the past used to be more of a training ground for young mothers and parents, with education classes, parenting classes, and an emphasis on developing practical skills. And without mother education classes, without healthy examples of parenting at home, which some women don't have, how is a woman who doesn't have these skills supposed to acquire them? How is she supposed to become a woman who knows? And so my mother was disturbed enough to write her own letter, and as far as I know, she's received no response. But we had some very interesting dialogues about this and really realized that we had some common ground on, you know, feeling uncomfortable with this talk and that it didn't quite fit it didn't seem to be applicable to the lives that we were actually living. And it was nice to be able to have those conversations with her and realize that even if we had different approaches, we were both still advocating and being activists in our own way.
First, I want to mention that it was actually Lori that did most of the work in the script. I don't want to sound like I'm necessarily the other one. And I wanted to talk about just one aspect of this experience. Many of you probably heard this quote before by Lydia Brooks, but I remember finding it when I was probably about a freshman at Utah State, when I discovered dialogue, and I would go back in the stacks and sit there and read the back issues. But this is in an essay by Lydia Brooks called Writing Her. And she said, One day, Dad said to me, "My girl, if you follow this tendency to criticize, I'm afraid you will talk yourself out of the church. I'd hate to see you do that. I'm a cowboy, and I've learned that if I ride in the herd, I'm lost. One who rides counter to it is trampled and killed. One who only trails behind means little because he leaves all responsibility to others. There's a cowboy who rides the edge of the herd, who sings and calls and makes himself heard, who helps direct the course. So don't lose yourself, and don't ride away and desert the outfit. Ride the edge of the herd and be alert. I know your directions and call out loud and clear. Chances are you won't make any difference, but on the other hand, you just might." And that was fairly appealing to me then, because even then I had some issues that I didn't particularly agree with on LDS practice, culture, and doctrine. Looking back at that 30 years later, I'm not sure that I have been very good at calling out to the herd at all. Between working for pay, going to school, raising kids, I've mostly sat in the corner and felt like I didn't fit at church rather than calling out very well. And sometimes it felt like the herd was running exactly counter to the way I would have liked it to run. But when I heard Julie Beck's talk, I had to say that it just really bothered me for many reasons that I'm not going to get into right now. I tried to write a blog post for a blog that I write at, and I couldn't come up with anything that I felt was positive enough to post there. And then when this group came together to decide to do this response, I decided that that was one way for me to write on the edge of the herd, calling out. So what I wanted to talk about was a little bit about one of the criticisms we received was the way that we did it, that we gave a public response on the internet. But let's talk about what else could we have done. Here are some of the options that were suggested to us. One is just discuss it privately with our friends. That might make us feel better, but probably won't do much to change anything unless we happen to be well-connected in the church. Only talking to our friends is an approach that keeps us from having a true voice. And if we're discussing things that make us unhappy, then we're accused of murmuring. The other approach, another one, is write personal letters to Julie Beck, which other people have mentioned. And we know of at least three people who wrote private letters and did not get any response at all. Another problem with writing those personal letters is that leaves many people who are also distressed by the talk, leaves them feeling alone. One sad response that we had from someone who left the church was, "Where were you when I was considering leaving the church?" Another suggestion to us was, "Talk about it in the Leaf Society." are we serious? I suppose that in some wards, there might be honest discussion of how this talk made women feel. But my guess is that in most wards, even mildly critical discussion would be stomped down quickly. And would any of that conversation be passed along higher up? And let me say on that, some of the people who worked on this together wanted to try to bring about some kind of change in the church, and others just wanted to have a voice. So changing anything was not necessarily a goal of everyone, but it was for probably some of us. And number four was, we should talk to our local leaders. Not a bad idea, and it might possibly work to bring out change on a local level for a time. But realistically, we still might be accused of murmuring, and our local leaders are not likely to have a lot of power to pass on our opinions to those in higher positions. So we made this choice, as phrased by a member of our group. We're talking out loud, not murmuring, not expecting anything to change, just asserting our right to be grown-ups, to talk out loud.
Like Becky, I have for a long time not felt very welcome in the Greek Society. If I sat and listened, I would be feeling many of the same things I felt listening to Julie Beck's talk, and I didn't feel like my voice was welcome. But the internet has certainly been a wonderful resource for those of us who haven't felt welcome in the existing groups. So many listservs out there where just about everybody can find a community of like-minded individuals. And this was a really wonderful experience in sharing thoughts, sharing our reactions and thoughts on this topic. This script is, as was mentioned, is a very short excerpt of many, many emails over the course of only really about a month, just slightly more than a month, because we had the site up on the internet by mid-November after the talk in October, so it was rather quick. And so that was just a real experience of bonding as sisters and sharing ideas. And it's not that everybody had the same ideas. There were concerns voiced and changes made and additions made, subtractions, to try and arrive at something that we all felt comfortable with. I was involved for the first 2 or 3 weeks in collecting the signatures, and it became practically a full-time job because there were so many that came in very quickly. And our facts mention, are you limiting who can sign this document? And our response is, no, there's really no way for us to do this. Now, that's only partially true. We did consistently have tried to verify that they were real individuals. A couple of times we did get, you know, fake names that were sometimes a little off color and so on. So we did make an effort to actually send an email back whenever someone emailed us and verify they were 2 individuals and ask them where they had learned about the signs. That was kind of a verification, too, of their intent. And we were, as you heard in some of those responses that were positive, we were really happy to hear that we were speaking to people who wanted to hear who wanted to know there were other people out there like us. And we did get quite a number of people linking in from ex-Mormon sites, recovery from Mormon sites. In some ways, that's kind of a concern. Well, aren't there active Mormon women who are interested? But then I realized in talking to one of those people, a young woman, about 38, who had found us through ex-Mormon site, but the reason she was there was because she was considering leaving the church, and she was looking out there to see what people were who were ex-Mormons, was there someplace she could go to talk to people about how it would affect her and so on. So actually she, as far as I think, just knowing that there were people like us out there has been a help to her, and she's not done that as far as I know at this point. So it is open to everybody. We have a few people who are no longer members of the church. Quite a few people probably who have left the church one reason or another, but people at all in very many states of belief and activity have signed the list.
Oh, they just want me to tell the story. We about 3 or 4 days into it, we all of a sudden got a whole lot of emails. And I used to be a high school teacher, so I figured out a bunch of these fake obscene names that people were using. But there was one that got by me. Someone who turned out later to be a BYU student had gone to the trouble of registering for probably 30 or 40 fake email addresses from a place that disguised, and then he started sending us names that were fake. And if you read them aloud, you realized that it was an obscene expression that he was trying. But I didn't miss one of them. Then the thing that most of us missed was that he started sending us a bunch of obscure NFL players' names. And and Cunning emailed me the one night and he said, do you realize that somebody is trying to vandalize a site or something? And he pointed out a few that had gotten past us. And it was just, to me, it was just odd that someone would go to that much work. And what we started doing, we always emailed back, but then we started waiting for a response from them to make sure that it was real. And we also would discuss whether anybody could see anything odd about those names. And
when we told the rest of the story,
I put some code from a place called Stack Counter on the site so we could see where our traffic was coming from. And I noticed that one was coming from, I forgot the name of it, is it Cooper Boards or something like that? It was a sports discussion board. And so I clicked on that link and went to see what it was, and it was the same guy boasting about the names that he had managed to get up there. But he also had enough in his profile that I could figure out a few things about him. And the other thing is, for some reason, he had downloaded our site onto his desktop, and he kept accessing it from his desktop, and so it showed up in our Stack Counter code what he had his full name on his desktop. And between the full name on the desktop that was coming into us, and the little clues that he left on the Cougar board, we could identify him as a graduate student in electrical engineering at BYU. And I thought of just maybe having put his name on the document.
I'm not going to tell you what. I'll tell you later, Brent.
But we did. The seed names were a little creepy, frankly, and so we did contact the people in charge of internet and stuff at BYU, and they took some kind of action, but I don't know what.
But
and I thought that was really good of them.
Well,
that they,
Paula, but he also made comments about the women, they're women, they'll never figure it.
That's right, yeah.
They're not computer savvy, they'll never figure it. Stupid.
We should mention also that originally our intention was just to have women sign, but it wasn't very long at all before men started to say, I'd like to sign this too. So within a couple of days, we added a men who support, women who know section at the bottom of the signature list.
And we thought about calling it men's auxiliary.
Do we get a president?
Lori's going to close us out and then we're going to open it up for questions.
Just a couple of things from what I said in a previous panel. Levina, you'll appreciate this since you often count words number of times people say things. So, inspired by Levina, I counted the number of times President Beck used power in her talk. And it was 7 times. Power and influence was a phrase she used often. And the problem is the talk was unbelievably retro, even reactionary in its perceived insistence that the only acceptable use of power by women is as mothers and homemakers. And it seems to me, it's not like we haven't heard the rhetoric before. Margaret talked a lot about this in our other panel. The problem is, and so the question arises, why then did a fair number of mainstream LDS women, let alone those of us with feminist leanings, respond particularly to Beck's talk, not just in whispers in the foyer, but on public blogs, and more dramatically, those of us who launched this website? A couple of reasons I think there was such a strong response. One was, I think there was the mere pettiness of a lot of the things that were stated in her talk. And secondly, I want to punctuate what I said in the script. As General and East Side President, Beck is in many ways our only voice within the patriarchal structure of the church, which means the weight falls on her to accurately represent our experience. I'd like to believe the reaction to her talk indicates that a growing number of LDS women are beginning to recognize that there might be an uncomfortable gap between Beck's narrow, prescriptive rhetoric and their experience, particularly as the sphere of women's influence expands in the secular world.
Vicki and I took off and went out of town for a couple of days while this was all going on, and when we got back, she had something like 1,280 messages on her email. And, you know, I live with my wife. Vicki is a very calm, rational, wonderful, committed feminist, but I also happen to live with Vicki, the warrior princess. And I'm wondering if you guys feel that the website is an example of the calm, rational, committed feminist, or if you feel like people are taking it too much as a manifestation of the warrior prince side of each of you.
Definitely have an inner warrior princess, and she came out in full force in those 1,280 messages that were flying back and forth. But like I said in my remarks, it really took the discussion that we were having to kind of bring it to a level where we could be heard, where the tone wasn't overruling the content, and so that we were able to make reasonable, rational, and intelligent points about what we were feeling. And what we were feeling was all over the map. There were people who were really super, super upset, and ones who were like, yeah, same old stuff. And so for me, the discussion that was happening behind the scenes helped sort of bring out all the raw emotional stuff and get it to a point where we could just forthrightly say what we felt and what our experiences were.
I see myself as a very devoted, I would consider myself a very conservative member of the church who has loved the general authorities and the leaders of our church very much. I try to do what's right and follow the church leaders in everything that they say. I thought you might be interested in my response to Sister Beck's talk from that perspective. I did three things immediately following her talk. One, I quit wearing white shirts the second meeting. Two, I seldom wear a tie. Three, I often read Sunstone during sacrament meetings. I just want to thank you women for your courage, for your wisdom, and I appreciate it very deeply. Oh, lastly, in response to the Stripling Warriors, I bought a bumper sticker that says, "We're making enemies faster than we can kill them." I'll put it on my car and drive it to church. Thanks.
I'm a woman who signed the document who has not been active for 19 years, and I want to thank you all so much for this document. And I want to stress to all of you that leaving the church doesn't mean you cease to value the training you received as a Mormon woman. And there are so many Mormon women who are so strong and wonderful and powerful. And thank you for allowing those of us who value the Mormon women in our lives, the Mormon women we were, the Mormon women we still are, even though we don't go to church, and for letting us sign this document.
To read this and to sign it, even though my name actually never made it on there. So, I couldn't figure it out. I especially appreciated the part about the Stripling Warriors. My husband had just returned from a year in Iraq after this, and so you really articulated things that I was feeling as well, and he's the one that forwarded it to me, actually. My question is just, you immediately got on and you had these friends to email, and I didn't have friends to email. So how did you guys even form this group beforehand where you had this jumping off point to do something like this?
Friends of friends of friends. So just give us your email address.
Yeah, we've basically been talking to each other for years in one format or another, and it just mushroomed from those conversations and getting to know each other in person.
Although we've had frequent new additions to the list, too, so it's not only people who've known each other for years and years.
Apropos of nothing but the comment from the gentleman who no longer wears white shirts to church. My favorite part of Sister Beck's conference talk was the photograph that was displayed while she was discussing the ironed clothes and brushed hair and white shirts and missionary haircuts of a young family, including a young son, wearing to church a beautiful orange t-shirt.
Excellent.
Well, the part of Sister Beck's talk that irritated me the most wasn't even in print. It was, you had to have seen it on the broadcast of the conference talks. And it was the pictures of the East Side East Bench kitchens with the granite countertops and really nice faucets and things. And you know, I thought, how in the world is this going to play in the Philippines? You know, this is a very privileged look at a very privileged viewpoint of women, and that's what I really objected to. I thought it was downright offensive to show that kind of imagery to women who are struggling, who are single, who are supporting their families, and here we've got these brand, you know, sheesh, who's he thinking of her?
The equation of motherhood with womanhood, it's astonishing to me that she would, as the Relief Society General President, automatically assume that, well, it's our goal. We all get to be mothers in Zion, and even if you don't get to in this life, the big prize is up there in heaven. I'm just, oh, it's so offensive. It's hurtful. It's painful.
I have a question. I'm wondering, with the tendency over the years that I've picked up on with the general authorities, well, let's see, the two that come to mind right now are when President Hinckley brought out his, you know, the bees. It was a previous thing that he actually brought out to the young men and then, you know, added more later for the general public, and they became something of signage for the Mormon homes. So we would have quotes by different prophets around, and then all of a sudden we've got the 9 bees, then the 12, excuse me. And then when President Watson was speaking to the young women in a general broadcast, he also created a list. And so I'm wondering if you think that because Sister Beck was using the preemptive, the power word, subtly creating her own list, because it seems to be something that happens a lot. And it's kind of, I'm wondering if subtly they're creating more checklists for members of the church to actually try and live by, which creates maybe more walls. I certainly would think with the checklist, the tendency for people to use them, you know, the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law, becomes more limiting, but it also becomes empowering to those that actually buy into it heavily so that they can at least hold God responsible because of the proving out her with comment, yeah. Scripture.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that we are definitely a checklist-making people, and we crave checklists primarily because we've abdicated our own spiritual authority. My experience was that I desperately, I'm supposed to be talking about this in panel tomorrow, but part of my problem as a parent, or my biggest problem as a parent, was that I wanted desperately to be right about everything. I wanted everything to be perfect. I wanted to be able to control everything so that my children could be mine forever. And you know, we just can't do that. We want everything to be certain. And that's what checklists apparently give us the ability to do. It gives us a sense of trust and security. So it would not... Sorry, that was a long answer, but it would not surprise me if, you know, that you were right on.
I have a little something to add. We know how Mormons like to print out stuff from the church and hang it on the wall. So we have our own printable version of the What Women Know statement. If you shrink it just a little bit, fits really nicely in an 8x10 frame. And I have one framed on my buffet in my dining room, and I sent one to my mom and my mother-in-law for Christmas.
So how did we get that?
It's on the website. You can click download PDF.
Take me past the checks.
That's it.
Just the bet not having it in the
the same frame as the proclamation.
I've really been pondering how Julie Beck could make such insensitive remarks, and so I've tried to come up with some kind of motivation. And I actually was serving my mission in Korea at the time that this talk was given, and something that really surprised me is how much the Korean women loved the talk. Being that they are the people who are underprivileged that we're talking about, who didn't have the opportunities like we're having here in America. I really have been thinking about this a lot, and I think that maybe one of the things that appeals to them, as well as maybe women in my age group, is that we don't have a dream, and we don't have an image of what this powerful woman is. And maybe one of the things that she was trying to accomplish is to give us an image of a dream or of a powerful woman. Now, she might not have presented that in the best way, but what image would you present? Who is this powerful woman that we want to make our dream, that we want to work towards, that we want to have as an ideal?
That is a great question.
Right there.
We are the powerful
emulate us.
There's no one. I think that's the issue, is that you get to create that yourself. There is no one powerful woman, one dream. It's that. And that's what we responded to viscerally about the talk, was that for us, at least.
Setting up the site was for not just for this statement, but we wanted to come up with affirmative statements about a lot of issues, exactly like that, where we weren't critical, we're trying to think of wonderful, affirming ways of being.
And that's really uncomfortable, that not knowing or that not... You know, trying to figure out who do I need to be? You know, what do I want to be? Who do I want to be? How do I need to be being to be that? And we get the being part. You know, we're told we need to be good, we need to be, you know, so we've got the checklist. But where that leads, you ultimately get to decide. And that may not work for anybody else, but that is an incredible high. That is incredible power of creativity to put in your hands. And it's really scary.
I know that when my children were young, I felt like it was very important to teach them clear gospel principles, clear standards. Even though I felt a little wishy-washy on some of those teachings myself, I still felt it was important to give them the direct, very clear information, because ambiguity is difficult. When you're an adult, even, and it's even harder when you're young. And so I think... In that sense, we have a lot of experiences, and we've come to wrestle with that ambiguity, and we feel the need to express it. But you're right. I think that for some people, that does provide an outline of some of their goals. It's just that maybe it didn't need to be quite so parochial and gender based.
Thank you so much for coming. We're so grateful.
This may be somewhat reminiscent of my soapbox speech at the Rocky Mountain Retreat in June, but clearly you're preaching to the choir at this point, and I truly appreciate your document. However, because of some of the negative responses, it's clear that this document has been perceived as divisive by perhaps our more conservative sisters. And, of course, divisiveness in women grieves me very much. And... I don't know. I just wonder if you have any thoughts on creating a common ground. If this document can do that, your thoughts, and if it doesn't do that, is there a common ground where the women who felt validated and loved at this talk can come together with the rest of us who may have not felt that same way?
Well, I think my experience was really profound in relationship to what you're saying, and... We actually had an experience on the list. There was a woman who was in particularly, she was particularly negative, almost vicious, I guess I would say, in her comments about us and about the site and about what we had created and who we were as human beings, you know, as people.
And somebody sent out an email to everyone saying that this particular person, they had read on her blog, that sometime later, that she had had a miscarriage. And should we send, and then someone responded, why don't we send her a card? And I didn't really express this a lot to anybody, but that was a pivotal moment. My comments when we started this today derived from that experience. I had an epiphany where I felt, I sat and wept for this woman. This is a universal, almost, you know, or one of those extremely common experiences that women have. I felt a sense of sisterhood with her, and I felt a sense of commonality with her and compassion for her, and it shifted how I felt about this document. So now, when I get confronted, when we did this panel at Sunstone West, someone came and was critical, and she said, you don't speak for 90% or 80% or whatever it is of LDS women. And I said, and that's okay. I mean, what I finally got was that it's not either or, right? It's okay for this document not to speak to you. Isn't that fantastic? That it speaks to me and that it reflects my experience. And so, I don't know, there just needs to be a paradigm shift. I mean, it built a sense of sisterhood in me that, I mean, I would never have. I would have dismissed her the way she dismissed me. But, and I have no idea if she got the card or how she felt about it or if we got any response from it, but that was a really pivotal moment for me. It's in drawing on those common experiences that we can create that, I think. And letting it be when it doesn't work for someone else.
I'll be brief. I was bothered in Sister Beck's talk when she said that couples shouldn't delay parenthood, because I think that they should. Couples shouldn't rush into becoming moms and dads until they're ready. And I've witnessed, my sister is a teen mother, and while it matured her tremendously, if she had waited much longer, then her children would have had a mother who was prepared for them. And if she had waited to have a spouse with her, then they would experience the love of a family. And most of the people that are rushing into parenthood do have, in the Mormon Church, do have a spouse. But I still feel that they're rushing. And I wonder if, since you didn't mention anything about that, if any of you feel the same way about that.
Well, we actually called attention in the FAQs, number 6, that we agree with church policy that these decisions are private matters. And that's what the church has been saying. Like, they haven't been saying, rush out, have them run away.
But her comments were so regressive. They were not even in line with what the kind of rhetoric we've been getting for the last 10 years from men, you know, male leaders. So that's why it was so stark.
Yeah, and I think there are tremendous cultural pressures to get married as soon as possible and have children as soon as possible. And it would be, I agree, it would be really great if we could ease up on that and let people grow spiritually and physically and emotionally so that they're prepared to deal with the difficulties in life and prepare to deal with children and how that changes a relationship even if you're married and what that adds to your life, both positive and the not so positive moments. So I agree. I think I'd like to see a little bit of the brakes applied and have people make thoughtful decisions about deciding to merge their lives with others.
That was a really good comment. Thank you for saying that. And I wanted to say one other thing. That did anybody else think that Russell Ballard's April General Conference talk was a direct result of this? He gave a really good talk about young mothers and how they should take care of themselves and make time for themselves. Don't watch soap operas. I remember that was one sage piece of advice. But I thought it came pretty much as direct as he could be as a response to our document here. So I wanted to throw that out.
Thank you so much.